Some kill, they're leaving it very open.
Hello 90s footy fans, welcome to episode 80 of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week our guest is former St Kilda ruckman, Lazar Vidovic. Lazar, a tough ruckman from Carlton, was recruited by the St Kilda Football Club in the pre-season draft of 1989 from the Castlemaine Football Club. Lazar spent 8 seasons at Moorabbin, playing 80 games and kicking 13 goals. In this episode he talks about his love of AFL over soccer, missing out on getting a photo with Al McPherson, his light-hearted personality around the club, playing against some of the game's great ruckmen, missing out playing in the 1997 grand final due to injury, and some of his teammates at the Saints. I hope you enjoy the 80th member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Lazar Vidovic. Lazar Vidovic, thank you for jumping on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Really looking forward to having a chat with you, mate, and reminiscing about your time in the AFL.
Yep, thanks for having me, mate.
Before we chat all things footy, what are you doing with yourself at the moment, Lazar? And do you still have any footy involvement?
My son's a bit older now, but I was coaching the Altona Juniors Footy Club there for a while, the league, and did a bit of ruck coaching and back in the day when I retired. With the Richmond and Hawthorne and that, but over the last few years, I've given it all away and worked down the wharf with a few old footballers down at West Melbourne.
Fantastic, keeping you busy, obviously. Anyway, so which is nice.
That's it. Yep, keep the money coming in. Obviously, we're not paid like the players today. You know, probably the value for the dollar back in the day was a lot better, but we're not on the money as they are today.
Hey, mate, how did you make your way to the St Kilda Football Club back in that sort of late 80s?
Long journey because I started at North Melbourne under 19s under Dennis Pagan at 16. Did probably 5 pre-seasons there and played probably just under 100 reserve games and under 19 games. Left North Melbourne because I couldn't get a gig down there. They kept bringing Donald McDonald and guys like that were playing and they kept giving them an option first and I was always a second stringer. Then they recruited a guy called John Mossop from Geelong. Played, he's a big redheaded bloke, big monster, and ready to go. I was only like 19, 20, I think it was. And I said, bugger it, I'll go play up in the bush, which was the Castlemaine Footy League. So I played for Castlemaine a couple of years and had a real bit of an impact there, but very tough football. And the Saints were drafting me in, I think, 88. They invited me down and I went and had a run with him, then got recruited in the rookie draft, I think late 88, and played my first game with him in 89.
Soccer was a big part of your family DNA. I think your father was a big soccer person, but your fondness was towards AFL. So what was it about AFL that sort of grabbed you rather than the soccer?
Oh, look, I grew up in the Carlton Flats as a kid and just started kicking a footy with a few kids down there. And I was a mad Carlton supporter, so we'd leave down the Carlton Flats. We'd make our way through the Carlton Cemetery to cut through the back ways and get to the Carlton football ground. So used to be one-eyed Carlton and always had a dream of playing footy. And the old man, he was Serbian descent. My mum's Dutch, so it was a bit of a mixture. And he started taking me down to Footscray. It was an old team that was in the state league back in the days when Juventus and all that were playing. And he's taking me down there, trying to make me a soccer player. I'd take a football down there like during the games and start kicking a football at half time. And all the European descended people would be going, "What's he doing? Bringing a football here?" You know. I said, "Well, I want to play football," and they're all trying to put me off it. And I'd go to the car and listen to back then we had channels like 3KZ and 3DB. I'd be listening to Carlton playing whoever they were to see if they were in front. You know, so. I just had this dream of playing footy.
Mate, can you remember much about your first pre-season at the Saints? Obviously, you would have got a little bit of a taste of some of the VFL pre-seasons when you were doing the under-19 stuff with North Melbourne. What was your first pre-season like with the Saints?
Well, Darryl Baldock had just taken over and I got down there and it was full of all the old characters, Joffa Cunninghams and Trevor Barkers and Mickey Wimmer had just been there, Tony Lockett's. It was like it was like the boys did their best work off the field in the Moorabbin Social Club. So that's I sort of fitted in well because I was a bit of a party boy at North Melbourne. That probably is why I didn't go too far down there. And Darryl Baldock one day, we'll go down to Wickham Road. We trained in the back of Moorabbin there. And he goes, we'll go do a bit of a run down there. Because I think back then the cricket pitches were in early pre-seasons. You would not normally train on your home ground because the cricket pitches were in.
Yeah.
And they didn't want you damaging the wicket or anything. So we trained on a local ground and started drizzling. And Darryl goes, oh, boys, look, we better get back. It was about 25 minutes into the drill. And he goes, started drizzling. He goes, we're going to be catching a cold, boys, so we better get back. Went back, had a team meeting, had a steak and some eggs and that up in the social club, and I thought, how good's this? I'm back in the AFL system and the training's pretty sort of not as intense as what it was at North Melbourne, so I ended up staying. and that was in 89. Then Darryl had a bit of a stroke or something happened with his heart, and then that's when Kenny Sheldon took over in 1990. And then he brought all that professionalism, like via what Carlton used to have unlocked Jezelenko and that all the big pre-seasons, and all of a sudden it turned into a club where you had to actually earn your spot in the team and train 7, 6, 7, 10 times a week just to get in there. So he brought that with him.
The ball thrown in. Up goes Vidovic, knocks it back towards the boundary line. It's Nathan Burke of St Kilda, picks up the ball and drives into the half forward line.
I want to just go back before we talk about Ken Sheldon, obviously his coaching at St Kilda, but 89, as you said before, you played your debut game.
I was picked in 88, but I'd done my knee. Yeah. Gordon Fogg ran across the leg, but then tweaked my anterior cruciate, which I didn't know. So I've had half a year off, come back in 89, played against Fitzroy. Matt Rendell was in the ruck. That was when Mick Conlon was there, and Ross Lyon was, he was a ruck rover. It was like full on, yeah. So next minute I'm where I wanted to be, and I remember there was about 30,000 there, and the crowd was bloody going off their heads, and the dream come true, yeah.
And then the next year, you missed due to injury again. What was the injury that you sustained in 1990? And did the rehabilitation go well enough for you to get ready for the next year?
Yeah, it did. It was a relapse of that 88 injury that I did, and into 89, I didn't know. I tore my anterior cruciate, probably half, and partially, and back in the day they get you to do some weights, like a lot of leg presses and all that sort of stuff, build up the quads, try and counteract it, and it gave way. First practice game, in I think it was in early in 1990, so I went and seen our surgeon back then. He was our he's now St Kilda supporter, I'm trying to remember his name, but good top bloke, and he just goes, mate, you've got no cruciate. And I go, what? So I've done the whole pre-season in 1990 without a cruciate. First game, one of the boys pushed me in the back and the knee just went clunk, and that was it. So I had to go get a full reconstruction, and I didn't come back till 1991. So I missed the whole 1990 season. But the St Kilda were very supportive of me. Peter Hudson was I think he was general manager back then, and Kenny Sheldon, they showed a lot of faith in me, and I was lucky enough to start back in 91 and played, I think I played about 6-8 games in Sydney, then got a behind the play incident. One of the boys up there, big tough bloke for the Swans, need me in the back. So I was trying to clean up one of the other Swans players, and I didn't know, broke 3 ribs and punctured my lungs. So I'm in Sydney, and they flew me back, and I'm in the plane going purple in the face, not knowing what was going on. My lung was collapsed, and I didn't know. So I go to the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and they're like, mate, you've got half a collapsed lung. How'd you get back? I said, I flew. They go, you could be dead. So that different different medical strategies back then. So I came back in 91 and played in that elimination final against Geelong, and we hadn't been in the finals for about 25 years. I remember training that week, and it was about 10,000 at Sandringham Footy Ground where we trained, and turned up away when it was about 89,000. We were playing Geelong. So I played in that final with a bloody strapped up mattress on the side of my ribs where I'd broken my ribs, and that like 6 weeks later, and I think it's this big hooper. Got Ablett running around trying to knee people in the back, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get through this? But got through it, and I think we won by 5 points.
I want to go back to 1990, and I don't know how I come across it, but I come across it online when I was doing some research just for our chat, and I seen that Al McPherson was the number one ticket holder in 1990, and yep. I saw a photo of her and the great late Spud Frawley. Did you get a chance to meet her at all? Was that part of the,
well,
obviously we're being a part of the Saints. Yeah, yep. Did you get a chance or?
oh, mate, you're bringing back, you're bringing back all these skeletons from the closet, because I still haven't got over it. What happened was I was in hospital having a knee reco, and Ellie's come in as the number one ticket holder, and they wanted me to present the jumper, number nine. And we had another ruckman from Adelaide. His name was Damien Kitschke. So he's presented the number nine to Ellie while I was in getting my knee reconstructed. And there's a photo. If you look it up, you'll see number nine, which is Damien Kitschke, Adelaide boy. I think he got homesick in the end, went back to Adelaide. Good ruckman, but there's another one that got past me. I could have had that would have been good on the wall, me and Ellie McPherson.
Hey, you mentioned Ken Sheldon before. So in 1989, I think he might have been still playing with the Saints at that stage. And then obviously, you know, a couple of years later he took over the coaching role. So how did the playing group adjust from having Ken as a teammate, then to Ken being the leader and the coach of the side? Was there a bit of an adjustment that sort of had to be made? Because obviously, you know, you get on with him well off the field, but when it comes to coaching, I guess it could be a bit of a different relationship.
Yeah, look, I was young, and I remember because Daryl Baldock, the great legend of St Kilda, he had that heart problem, so he had to retire. And then Kenny was in the wings, and I remember him saying to me, are you right? And you get yourself right for next year? It's almost like going around canvassing all the players. And back then, we had a lot of Carlton players. We were almost like, you know, we had guys like Spiro Kukamilos, who else? Ian Muller. Who else was there? Wow Jones was there at that stage. He just retired. There was a heap of them. So I think even Alex Mark, who, like, it was a heap of Carlton players there. So they were all behind him. And he had the backing of the whole playing list. And, well, he actually got us to the finals for the first time in, like, say, 20 years or what I said. And was successful. And, just 92, the same thing. He goes in the finals. And then I think it was a bit of a spat with the board and that, and a bit of a coup. And that's when Stan Els took over in 93, I think it was.
You spoke about 1991 and 1992 playing finals. Obviously playing two finals in 92 off the back of that that final series in 91. How much did the tempo lift in comparison to a home and away season game? Like, obviously, you know, and I know you're a very emotional and, you know, very tough big man that ran around. How much did you sort of lift for the finals when you got to play them?
Yeah, your average sort of player that was, I wasn't a household name like a lot of people. Like, you had guys like Nathan Burke, Robert Harvey, Tony Lockett running around, you know, and we're playing against Ablett's and Billy Brownless's and that. So, to me, it was like a challenge where I had nothing to lose, everything to gain. So, you know, had no high tags on myself. So I used to try and perform in the big games. It was like a challenge to me. And I thought I did well in a lot of finals. You know, some players sort of lose it in that moment where the crowd's going, the media's there, and you're in finals, and you can either go one way or the other, you know. So I always seem to look at players that play well in the finals, you know, like that can perform on the big stage. So I always thought that I did okay, you know. But the tempo you're talking, it's a completely different game. And you see it, you'll see it with the AFL this year. You see it every year. Come finals time, especially at Grand Final, turns back to an old-fashioned arm wrestle. Mm. And it's like the AFL used to be, you know what I mean? And, so it's a big tempo rise, mate. With, I suppose, any finals in any league that you play with, it's all mental, you know. You just got to psych yourself into it.
Vidovic again winning the taps. Taken by Greg. The handball good to Craven, who can attack to Lockett. Great mark, big fellow.
1994, you said before, Stan Els took over the reins from Kenny Sheldon. Did you enjoy playing under Stan? Obviously, he played 18 games in his first season, so you must have sort of felt at home when Stan took over.
Yeah, Stan was always under the wing of Kenny, because Stan was assistant coach there for a while. And Kenny, like, he was aligned with Peter Hudson and that. Like I said, there was a bit of a spat with the board, and Kenny goes, well, I'm out of here. If you're not going to give me the coaching staff and panel that I want to move us forward, I'm going to leave. I said, oh, well, fine. So Stan took over. Stan was another sort of man's man. Come back, he's out of the Barassi years where they were, you know, hard bloody coaches and hard sort of industry that we played in. And mate, yeah, Stan either loved you or hated you. He was an old school coach. He brought some new techniques to the club that probably still are used today, you know, like different styles of match play through what American gridiron or whatever it might have been, you know. So Stan, he had a lot of people behind him, but then, I mean, some there was always some players where the coach don't get along with you. But I probably played my best footy with Kenny Sheldon and more understandables as well.
I was told by an ex-teammate of yours that's been on my podcast that you were a bit of a jovial character at the club, and there might have been a time when Stan was coaching. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is sort of the lines I got told. But one night at training, before you guys were going out, what might have been afterwards, I can't quite remember the conversation, but they said that Stan was about to play some footage of the previous week's game to review, and then that you might have changed the videotape and chucked a little different viewing on.
Yeah, we lost the game, and Stan was getting very intense and very, getting too wound up with the loss. We had a couple of losses, and Kenny Whiffen, an old trainer of ours, a ripper bloke, he goes, "Stan, you got to loosen up a bit, mate. You got to you got to make it a bit of fun." And Stan comes up to me, he goes, "Look, I'm going to send the boys in that room. We're going to watch the first quarter of this game from last week to see where we can do things better. Can you sort of get them all wound up a bit and, you know, sort of loosen them all up and get something going?" So we've gone in there. Before the boys got in there, I swapped a tape. I went down an adult video movie and I've whacked that in there, right? And so the boys are ready to watch this game. Next minute, these girls are on the screen. It's like the hardcore 4X or XXX movie going on. They're all out of control, laughing and carrying on. Stan just goes, "I didn't expect you to go that far, mate," but it had the effect. So the boys loosened everyone up. We got over that last week's game and I think we won the next round, you know. So it was just, it's all about the mental side of the game, as we know, don't we?
Oh, I love it. I cracked up when I heard that. I thought, if I ever get you on the podcast, it's one question I'll be certainly asking, and you've answered it beautifully,
yeah,
mate.
It was true. Yeah, yes, it was true.
Hey, mate, I think back into the 90s, and I just think of the midfields and the ruckman that you would have had to come against. Like, some of the names that I just jotted down: Scotty Wine, Johnny Barnes, Jim Steins, Paul Salmon, Sean Wren, Justin Madden. Geez, you had some tough bloody opposition ruckman to come up against. Who was the one that you felt was hardest to match up against?
Oh, yeah, Scotty Wine. He was he was very hard. He was 6'9". I was probably one of the shortest ruckman going around at 6'3". You know, you've got Spider Burton was nearly 7 foot. He played at Frio. You're talking like, back in the day, the ruckman were, you know, there might have been dinosaurs, but that people don't rate them. They were very mobile. You're almost like looking at 10 or 12 Max Gorn running around. You know, they were good on the ground, good on their feet, good in the air. People don't give the ruckman credit for where it's due, but so it was always a battle for me. But I'd say Scotty Wine was very hard. He's one bloke that never worried about jumping in a hole when Tony Lockett was coming out. One thing Tony Lockett hated was any ruckman blocking the holes. He'd just come out with his knee and just ram it straight down your back, you know. And Scotty never flinched an eyelid, so I always rate him. Monkhurst, he was a bit of an ugly bloody character. That he hated me and I hated him. And, he'd sort of have a go at my heritage and that, and have a go at me. But I found out later he's Dutch and so is my mother, and he's having a go at my heritage. It's back when you know, you could call each other whatever you wanted, you know. Jimmy Steins, another one, mate. You turn your back and he'd be on the wing at Waverley. You turn around 1 second and he's right down the wing on half a K away. I'm going, how do I keep up with this bloke, you know? Johnny Barnes, another one, he's very mobile. So very hard to beat. So those guys back then, we didn't have a centre circle. So you could line up at the centre bounce, you know, 20, 30 metres away and run in like a jumbo jet taken off at the airport. So just run in and just ram that knee straight into the chest, if you could, of a mobile ruckman to try and slow him down. The big dinosaurs, like, you know, Justin Maddens, he was almost unplayable. His big, long arms, his reach span was probably 10 foot. So it was a tough era, but it'd be good to see some more ruckmen like that come through. But I suppose a lot of them are more playing basketball and soccer and all those sort of things, so you don't see as many coming through.
Great traditional ruckman back then. If you looked at a current-day ruckman at the moment, and sort of see some attributes that you displayed back when you were playing in the 90s, who would be close in the current day format that might play a similar sort of game to what you did back in your time, do you reckon?
I reckon Nan Curvis, yeah, probably to a T. Yeah, he just runs in, jumps in hard, just rams that knee straight in and tries to nullify you. I'd say someone like Nan Curvis. You know, you Max Gorns and that, they're more like the Jimmy Steins types. You know, they're very mobile, light on their feet. Who else is out there these days? The guy McInerney, he goes pretty hard. He's all legs and bones, you know. But yeah, as you see, got like guys like Gorn's partner, Ruckman from Collingwood, Grundy. I remember his name. Grundy's, they're almost Ruck Rovers on their feet. They're like Jimmy Steins types. Jimmy Steins was like ahead of his time. He was playing that footy, you know, back in the '90s, and back then, and there was anything went. You know, you had to watch out for bloody king hits from behind. There was less cameras, so you know, not only to worry about an opponent, to worry about, you know, getting king hit, or you know, your life's at stake at some of the packs that you jumped into. You know, so yeah, it's a lot cleaner, a lot better.
Edwards brings it back into play, and Burton again. Well,
that wasn't so subtle.
That was quite amazing, wasn't it?
What about 1996, mate? That must have been a great year in the fact that he's won the ANZAC Cup. And I know the pre-season competition had a bit of prestige back in that mid-90s. It was a bit of a thing to win it. For you guys, you hadn't had much silverware at the Saints for a long, long time. So to win that big moment, that must have been a good part of that year, and obviously something you look back fondly on.
Yeah, it was a good win, but, you know, it wasn't a real premiership, but we'd celebrated, like, St Kilda wins their first premiership since 1966. It was only a plastic cup, wasn't a real thing, you know, but it was something that gave us hope. And we partied like it was, you know, the second win since 66, and the club went wild, the supporters went wild, and probably got a bit ahead of ourselves. Sort of went okay, I think, and then we lost a few games later on, but, the following year we... came good and got into the finals, yeah, and in 97. And then that's when I did my knee, just before the last home and away round against Port Adelaide. I was rucking against Primus and Brendan Lay. There's another couple of ruckmen that we've forgotten about who are very tough and strong. Did my knee, so I missed out on that 97 final, the grand final. And there was another, you know, from that Ellie McPherson, it was another thing that was a bad spoil on my footy career. Spider, I think, broke his collarbone the week before, so we went in without a ruckman. Brett Cook came in as a third stringer. Brett was a good ruckman. He did well against Corey McKernan in that final to get into the grand final in 97, but he was one out against two ruckmen, you know, being Sean Wren and Pittman, and we were undermanned, and it had an effect on us. Yeah. So I look back at that end of my career as being a bit of a downer, but, you know, you've got to move on, but that's life.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, Lazar, but do you look back now and think maybe if yourself and Spider ran around in that grand final, do you think that the result might have changed? I know it's a bit of a different way, but I just think for balance and structure, obviously, you know, you around the ground, big Spider up forward, you know, swapping on and off, up against big, their ruckman and so forth. Like, do you think the result could have changed?
We had a great combination, yeah. We had, you know, it was... Like where I'd be rucking most games on my own, Spider come along and I could have a spell on the bench, Spider would go in the ruck, then Spider would go forward, Stewie Lowe would have a go in the ruck. So we had a beautiful rotation going. It just sort of buggered up the whole strategy of it all. Having said, could we have won? Who knows? A lot of supporters do come up to me and say, well, if you had a won, we would have won the grand final. Look, the only thing that gives me a bit of joy out of it all, but even that was a loss, so we never get over that loss. But, look, it didn't help, you know, having the two big ruckmen, as in Sean Wren and Pittman for Adelaide, with Brett Cook one out against two big, you know, monsters. It didn't help us. And, you know, history shows that we bloody lost it and we should have won that one, you know.
That injury obviously, I guess, retired you to a certain degree with, that was the injury that occurred and you retired soon after. Was it tough to hang up the boots after, you know, your long affiliation, obviously from that under 19 years at North Melbourne and then to, you know, your 8 or 9 years at the Saints as well. Was it tough to hang up the boots and move on to the next phase of your life?
Yeah. It's the toughest thing. That's what a lot of people don't see out there with AFL footballers. You know, you're a kid at 9 years of age, you dream of playing AFL and you become, you know, you hit 16, 17, you get recruited to a club and they groom you, they train you, they nurture you to the person you are, and then at 33, I think it was, your career's over, and you walk out, and you're just yesterday's hero, you know. And it's very tough to adapt to the normal lifestyle of just normal life. So I suppose a lot of guys go into coaching and that, which I didn't. But it was a tough time, and takes years to get over, you know. And you got your new batch coming through. I think we had big Mickey Gardner come through from WA, and Ree Waller just started, Joe Montagne, all those blokes. So you become yesterday's hero very quick, you know, and all of a sudden people forget about you. But it's good, you know, like podcasts like this to bring back some memories and talk about a career that you had. And I still keep in touch with a lot of friends like Nicky Winmar and that, and Spider Everett. We still keep in touch. And it's good to touch base. And you make lifelong friends. And I suppose with any footy club, you do have that connection, you know.
Oh, well played. Big Vidovic against Kilpatrick. Look at this. Big laser Vidovic. Oh, he running too fast. He had a man loose. He's put it out in the full. But great effort by Vidovic. He's been an excellent player.
I'm going to give you a couple of quick handballs to finish off the podcast, mate. I've loved reflecting with you, and such a great journey that you've had in your time in the VFL AFL. So I'm going to give you five teammates from the Saints, and I just want you to share a word or a couple of words just to describe, you know, what these teammates were like during your time at Moorabbin. So the first one I'm going to throw you is Rod Keogh.
Rod Keogh, yep. I played with him at Castlemaine. Toughest, hardest, probably one of the toughest, hardest men I know. Yeah, would run through a brick wall for you.
What about the great Robert Harvey? What a star he was.
Just a ripper, mate, hardest trainer, hardest passion, hardest character I've ever seen get the most out of himself.
Plugger Lockett, obviously you got to play with him for a number of years, but then you played against him too when he went up to the Swans. So what was Plugger like as a teammate and then Plugger like as opposition?
Plugger's what you see is what you get. He was the same bloke on the ground as he was off it. Very staunch man, powerful human, ripper bloke. Had a few beers with him off the ground, and heart and soul of St Kilda.
What about Stephen Ziller? Obviously, spent some time at Richmond as well, but started at the Saints and was a grand final side member as well. What was Stephen Ziller like?
Let's call him Little Dirty Ziller. He used to get in and under, tough as nails. Mate, one of the toughest. Up there, one of the toughest I've seen as well with Rod Keogh. If he had played on Jarman in that last quarter in the grand final, we'd probably win the game. But, you know, Jamie Shanahan, they had the mismatch with him. Don't want to bring up old dead wood out of this situation, but a tough cookie.
And the last one, I guess he's a guy from around my region in the Western District or the Hampton regions, Tim Peakin.
Timmy Peakin, legend. Played 200 games. Wasn't much of him. He was one of the alternative type of players back then, which you have now. Vegan, vegetarian, organic eating, whatever, mate. Skill. He used to ooze skill. Could mark overhead. Could run. Ripper bloke. Got a high amount of respect for him.
Who's the best character you've come across? You know, one that you can have a few beers with and talk a bit of the proverbial. Who was the one you enjoyed hanging out with at St Kilda, mate?
Oh, there's a few of them, you know, guys like Jack Daniels and, you know, even getting back to Craig O'Brien, the boys would know it down there. I still like the knockabout, yeah, Spider Everett. You know, there's a heap of them, Mickey Dwyers, but those guys like Everett and guys like that, we could have a beer and Nicky Winmar, just as crazy on the field as they were off it, you know.
Who was the biggest pest? Who used to give, you know, used to be the practical joker at the club and get under the, you know, give other teammates the shits at times, all in a good fun, mate. Was there a biggest pest?
Yeah, Danny Frawley. He was number one. He was the best. And we're going back to Port, you know, Danny, like it's a hole out of our lives. You know, we miss him. Mate, some of the shit that he did, like, you know, if a new recruit come along, I remember Brian Wilson from Melbourne come along, Brownlow medalist. He thought he was eating a bit. He had to come in with his Porsche. You know, we're all driving old Taranas and old bloody Mitsubishis, and he comes in with his. I think it was a 930 turbo Porsche. He thought he was the best. Come from Melbourne, so Spud super glues his wiper blades down, and so he goes home, starts drizzling, he turns the wipers on, the wipers aren't working, so he burns out two motors in it. He goes, "Who super glued me wiper blades down? It cost me $2,000 being a Porsche." So he tipped that $2,000 out of his pocket. So Spud Frawley, some of the things he did, you would just, I could talk for hours about it, but that's the stuff that Spud did, yeah.
Oh, love
being
it.
Our captain. So, you know, he turned a hard, serious game into fun, you know, just around the club.
Who was the team you loved to beat, mate? And you spoke obviously that, you know, you didn't like Monkey all that much from the Pies. Was there a team that you just loved beating when you got the opportunity?
Yeah, look, the Pies, they'd always be there. They're always a benchmark for everyone. You know, like Geelong, guys like that, because back then they had Ablett and and Brownless and that. We always had a rivalry with them. Yeah, when Couch was playing with them and the coach for Port Adelaide, Hinkley and that. So they had a bloody good team. So it was a big rivalry there. We always tried to beat, like to beat Geelong, but they always had our measure. Yeah,
and the
Carlton was another one.
Carlton.
Yeah, so, yeah, Carlton. We'd love to beat Carlton, even though I barracked for them. That one that we always tried to beat.
How did you go playing against Carlton? Obviously, you know, you barracked for them. You said you were tragic growing up. Like, when you had that first opportunity to play against Carlton, how'd you go?
Oh, yeah, well, I remember playing, I think, reserves against them. I'm almost like tackling the wrong jumper. I'm thinking, oh, shit, you know, I grew up loving Jezelenko and Wale Jones and Kenny Sheldon. They're all my idols. Yeah, next minute I'm sort of at a club playing with them. You know, you just had to sort of pinch yourself to see that you were actually playing AFL and that with them. But, yeah, so...
And, mate, the last one I'm going to ask you for our chat is you play with some exceptional midfielders at St Kilda, Robert Harvey, Nicky Winmar, Nathan Burke, Timmy Peakin, as we spoke about, and a host of others. Who was the one that you felt like you just had the best synergy with around, I guess, you know, centre and stoppages and obviously stoppages around the ground and so forth? Who was the one that you sort of just worked in tandem with?
Brett Bowie, Frankie Coghlan. But we'd have sort of like a secret look and I'd be saying, just sort of head over that way towards the... you know, the point of the square and that, and I'll just give it a big backhand or bang and it'd be straight on it. So Brett Bowie had a real good radar vision with me. You know, Frankie Coghlan was another one. I could just read the tap. All the others, like Harvey and Winmar and, you know, and Nathan Burke. And it was, you know, heaps of them. They were just bloody, like playing with Rolls Royces. Yeah, they made you look good. You know, you'd take a mark and before you knew it, bang, it was out of your hands and they'd be like the roadrunner up the ground at 100 mile an hour. Yeah, I was very blessed to play with some good people.
And I'm going to give you one last one. Which teammates had the best or the funniest nickname at the St Kilda Football Club during the time? Is there one that sort of stands out, was a bit unusual or?
There's a few of them. Jack Daniels was funny. He used to call it, I'd call him Big Horse. funny name, Jack Daniels. Yeah, as you've interviewed him on this podcast, long story, but yeah, he's one. There's a few of them, but they'd be funny. Big Horse, Jack Daniels.
Lazar Vidovic, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you on the podcast, mate. I really appreciate you taking some time to have a yarn with us.
No, fantastic. Thanks for having me, and I hope it goes well. And nice to talk about the past, and hopefully the Saints can go on and win a couple in the next few years.
Kennedy tried to get out of it with strength, but he was tackled nicely, and that spilt the ball towards Harvey. Harvey spears a pass, and a good pass too. It finds the lurking Vidovic. Vidovic puts the ball to Boot, pumps it long, and is put it through. Goal to the Saints, just as we were saying, they couldn't score a goal. They put one through, and it's their fourth. Herald Sun classified scoreboard, St Kilda, 4-5-29. The Brisbane Bears. A pathetic 5 points.
That's the end of episode number 80. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. Our first guest of Series 9 will be released in mid-January, and our first chat will be with Magpie Premiership player, Shane Morwood.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.